Welcome to the Indestructible Wealth Podcast. This is the place where we help young entrepreneurs and professionals to make, keep, and grow wealth that you can enjoy now and for years to come. I'm your host, Jack Gibson, a serial entrepreneur, founder of multiple seven and eight figure businesses, and wealth building strategist. Each week, I'm going to share my tips, resources, and secrets to help you create a plan and build the life you've dreamed of.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Indestructible Wealth. I've got a special guest on the line today. As you guys know, I do a lot of whole life insurance. In fact, I put out an Instagram reel where it actually got some traction. I got like 4,000 views, which for me is going viral, which was a great day. But on that, I talked about how I fund every month $8,600 or $100,000 a year into a whole life insurance policy. Now, there's a lot of people out on the internet that absolutely hate it, bash it, and think that it's just a complete ripoff. To me, they do not understand it. And naturally, when you do not understand something and don't really grasp who's it for and maybe who's it not for, then you tend to create these false impressions in your mind, and then you end up spreading toxicity around your negative opinion around to others that it really isn't valid. So today I want to bring on a special guest to clear things up. His name's Brock Bordner. He's from Nashville, Tennessee, where ironically, our high return real estate company is now headquartered. So it's pretty cool. I think we have special partnership developing here, and I wanted to bring him on to help maybe clear up some of the misconceptions and also give you guys some really cool investing rules that can help you to guide you and live by. So Brock, thanks for joining us. Appreciate you being on, man.
Yeah, thank you, Jack. This is going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, we actually will. I think we'll have a good time and potentially entertain our audience talking about insurance.
Let's hope so.
Yeah, that's quite the
thing. I have a degree in that, and I can tell you, I think I fell asleep in almost every class.
Well, let's not put our listeners to sleep today.
We'll make sure we don't do that.
All right. Well, start off. You're so young, right? You're 25. You started in insurance since you were six, and you've had some really cool mentors, including your dad. Tell us a little bit about that beginning of, you know, how you got going in this industry and what attracted you to it.
I was going to college. I was playing baseball and trying to figure out life like everybody does. And
what college were you going to?
Just a small junior college here in Tennessee.
What position?
I was second base and right field.
Okay.
I could use my bat and I was fast, so I had a good time.
So you could get on base, and then you get on base, you created havoc.
Yep. I was usually the two-hole hitter or the three-hole hitter. I would almost always be in a hit-and-run situation or bunting or, hey, you got to hit oppo field. You got to do something for us.
Just a fun fact, I hit 5 home runs in one game one time.
Nice.
Yeah.
Like it.
Sixth grade.
When I was growing up, a few of my buddies that we played with growing up, they are now playing pro ball, but we were playing in a state championship when we were 10 years old, and we were in the championship game. Everybody knew we were going to win. The guy in front of me literally hit 2 grand slams in the same inning. So
2 grand slams in the same, how is that even possible?
We ran the crap out of that other team. It was awesome.
You blew them out.
Yeah.
No mercy rule on that game.
Huh? Yeah. We started the game at midnight, which was really cool because it was a state championship ball game and we had a lightning delay the whole time and we had to finish the game that day. So that was a cool little experience I had in life playing a baseball game at midnight.
Yeah, I like it. That'd be fun. Yeah. All right. So yeah, you're playing ball in college.
Yeah, playing ball, going to college. And then my dad actually invited me to one of his workshops that he had for other advisors. And, you know, I was like, well, what else am I going to do? I might as well go because I don't want to sit behind a desk growing up. I don't want to do, you know, these regular jobs that people talk about, even though I ended up getting 3 degrees in jobs that should be behind desks, but I don't use those. So, but I got into it. And I mean, after that first workshop, I was like, man, this is really what I wanted to do. And I was blessed by who my dad was in this industry. He brought up a lot of guys in the business and he had a major role in this planning world. And so a bunch of those guys ended up taking me under their wings and showing me what they learned and how they learned and sharing their wisdom with me. And I just took a hold of it. And so, you know, if you worked with me in the first probably 2.5 years of my business, you didn't really work with me. You worked with somebody else that I brought you to. And I just took in as much information as I could. I was always made fun of because I'd go to bed at like 9 o'clock, 8:30 every night, but I'd be up 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning, rewriting my father's notes, reading books, trying to figure out how does this financial world interact? How does it work for people? And kind of gave me a good launching pad.
Yeah. You talked about, I mean, you have some incredible people that you've actually in the industry that have trained you. For example, Garrett Gunderson, you know, he's got some really pretty popular best-selling books, right? There's Killing Sacred Cows. I didn't read that one. I did read What Would the Rockefellers Do? And that one was absolutely fun, fantastic. And I mean, anybody who really wants to understand the power of infinite banking, privatized banking, whole life insurance, right? It goes by different names. Incredible book on that. So he trained you. So what that gave you a huge leg up. I mean, just talking to you, you're 25 and you got like the wisdom of, you know, somebody much older.
Thank you.
I look at it and I'm like, man, the guy was just well trained. I mean, you had great mentors. And of course, you were smart and teachable and you've absorbed everything, which has put you so much further ahead when you have great mentors. So tell me about that experience and your dad too, right? Your dad's apparently a legend in the business.
Garrett, yeah, he's got some phenomenal books. I always give him a shout out whenever I can. He's got a new blog out right now that I absolutely love as well. But he wrote those books like What Would the Rockefellers Do? Killing Sacred Cows. His newest one was Disrupting Sacred Cows. He's a really close mentor of mine. I guess I could say my dad raised him in the business and his three other partners. We've been able to create a really cool relationship. We get to speak probably every week now and have built a really cool bond. And I was able to glean a lot of information off of him and just a bunch of other guys out there that I personally call them my board of titans. So whenever I'm going through business or I come across something I haven't seen before, I'm trying to make an investment decision of myself, I go to these guys to ask them, hey, how do you look at this? How should I look at this? What did you see when I was this age of, you know, how would you make these decisions?
Yeah.
The more I could soak in, I was told early on, and this is kind of goes for everything, but when you go into a conversation, don't go into this conversation with the mindset of, let me prove you wrong and why I'm right. Go into the conversation of, hey, I don't know if you're right, but let's see if it works and see what can happen out of this conversation. Because a lot of times most people just go in, hey, I'm going to show you why you're wrong and I'm right.
Yeah. So what exactly did they teach you about whole life that you think kind of separated your journey from other people that didn't have that kind of mentorship?
It's funny because there's a few aspects to it. So one that first came to mind was the fact that in our financial life, every team has an offense and a defense, right? And we always want to make sure that those are balanced. But the way that most of the financial world, the investment world, the way that they'll look at it is they'll look at your growth first and then your savings and then your protection. Whereas we kind of flip that world upside down and say, hey, we want to make sure we look at protection first and then our savings and our growth, because we can do savings and growth over again. If you get protection wrong the first time, there are no do-overs. You can't die and come back and say, hey, I'd love to get some more life insurance. You can't get in a car accident and say, hey, can I have the insurance now? The bad part about insurance is when you need it, you can't get it. It's too late, right? So we need to get it when we don't need it, right? In this aspect of this economic value of certainty, when you have protections in place, most people see it as like a necessary evil. But when you take it from a mindset of, hey, this is how it coordinates within my whole plan, it really creates an abundance mindset to say, hey, like I'm protected, everything's good to go. Now we have a solid foundation of where we can go from and we can swing for the fences in what we want to take care of. Now, when it comes to exactly the whole life insurance piece, there's a conversation out there by a guy named Bob Castellone, and he was kind of the guy who really got the whole life insurance thing started in a big way. Through a system called the LEAP system, which stands for Lifetime Economic Acceleration Process. And he has this conversation about your whole life insurance should be the heart of your financial model. And so if you can run a large portion of your income through the whole life insurance, you can use that whole life insurance to feed all your other assets. And those be arteries to feed your heart, your whole life insurance over again. And, you know, if we have a strong heartbeat, our blood is flowing really good. We've got great oxygen going. We've got great blood flow. And the same is true with our personal economies. The greater our money flow, the more thriving and more abundant our personal economies will be. And that's kind of the whole mindset around the whole life insurance and why it's such an important tool to have. And, you know, I talk to a lot of young guys and I call it the KPI account, because your money needs to hit a few KPIs before you send it somewhere else and risk it in different assets.
KPI being key performance indicators.
Yeah. Sometimes we talk about five, but four main ones, right? So the first one is we want to have somewhere that we could put our money into that we're going to have like a minimum rate of return. And it's not going to be like a 1% or a 0.1% like most people are getting. Majority of the time, a lot of people are getting seduced into the, hey, you got 3%, 3.5% on your savings account, when in reality, those probably won't last very long, right? They fluctuate.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, off all the money in my checking account, I think I get like 30, 50 cents, something along there, yeah. Dividends or payments. It's really sad.
Yeah. So that's the first one, is like, we want to make sure that we get a minimum rate of return. The second one
What kind of rate of return are you seeing on the policies? Mine, I think, is like, I want to say between 4 and 6%. Is that pretty typical in today's market?
Yes and no. So a couple of years ago, COVID kind of threw me off. I don't know when this actually happened anymore, but I know it was recent. Some actuarial tables changed, the interest rate environment changed. So where a lot of our policies used to be guaranteed at 4%, now, depending on what company you're with, will be anywhere between 2.75 and I think 3.75, right? So like for me, one of my own policies, my guaranteed minimum is 4 on one of them. And then another one, my guaranteed minimum, I think, is like 3.
Okay.
But then you get those dividends on top of that.
Sure.
And for me, if I know that my cash sitting on the sidelines is earning a tax-free 4%, that's pretty good, right? So I'll take that. So that's that first KPI that I want to hit, is that minimum guaranteed rate of return.
Sure.
Second one is the safety. Now, safety comes in like two buckets, right? There's safety from market volatility, and then there's safety from like lawsuit protection, right? Yeah. Now, the first one is always funny, because people always want to tell you, oh, invest early, often, and always, just dollar cost average and you'll be average, right? Nobody talks about the, hey, you'll be average part, but that's kind of what that is. And so
we didn't sign up to be average, right? I didn't sign up.
That's right. That's right. But don't time the market is what they say. So if you can put your money in a place that is safe from market volatility, you know it's always going to go up. Well, then instead of you timing the market or just being average with, you know, dollar cost averaging, you can do what some guys call pounce investing. Like, hey, you know, this is a good investment. I'm going to go now take care of this. I'm going to put my money here. And you were able to do so because you had money that wasn't affected by the market. It was 100% uncorrelated. That's kind of like where I think it's Warren Buffett, where he's like, the best time to buy is when there's blood in the streets, right? Well, if all your money is in the market, you know, you're down. Sorry.
How do you buy if all your money's in the market?
Exactly. That's one of them. And the second one is like, you know, how do we store our capital somewhere that's going to be protected in the event of things like a bankruptcy or a lawsuit, something like that? Now, that's state dependent, but if something happens at one of our rental properties or one of our businesses and we're kind of going back and forth in a lawsuit, well, if we can't touch our money because somebody gets access to it if we want it, or they can put a lien against it, or it's theirs anyways, what was the point of us leaving the capital there, right? That's what I see with more bigger time investors when they hold money in bank accounts or brokerages accounts. And it's like, hey, that's up for grabs if something goes wrong, right? So that would be the second one, which is safety. The third one is accessibility. We need to be able to access those dollars. A lot of people are saving in their retirement savings account when really they're just investing and they can't even touch that money, right? They're not saving any money. They're investing all that money. Saving, you actually can utilize it. You can touch it. You can grab it. You can access it, right? That's what being liquid means. And so we want to be able to access that. And then the last one is being tax advantaged. If we put our money somewhere that we're storing for the next investment, but if we do good because the investment did good and we got to get taxed on that, and then we're going to get taxed again if we want to access the money, that kind of puts us at a loss every time that we want to use it for something else, So those are kind of the four main KPIs that I look at from my money when I put it into Whole Life.
So can you explain, you know, the difference? Maybe the listeners are not even clear on the difference between, say, a Whole Life, Universal Life, Term Life.
Yeah. So there's a lot out there right now.
Yeah.
Term life insurance. You're going to see things like a 10, a 15, a 20, a 30, a annual renewable term, a return of premium, or a term to 80, which is some a notable company has, right? And what this typically is you're going to see it's going to be a small premium, and all you're going to have is a death benefit for those number of years. Now, what I tell people is less than 2% of all policies ever put in force have ever paid a claim. Term insurance, in the grand scheme of things, in the macroeconomics of your financial life, is probably the most expensive life insurance you could get.
Because you're never really going to pay it out. You're never really going to get anything out of it.
Yeah. Where else are you going to put a bunch of money and hope that you get a 0% rate of return on? Right? So that's term insurance. It's just you pay a premium and then you get a death benefit if you die. Right?
So you don't sell a lot of term yourself then?
Yes and no. I don't sell a ton of it, but what I do is when I do sell it, it's because we're covering a gap of coverage for somebody in their what's called economic life value. We're pretty much insuring their future insurability, right? The bad part about life insurance is you just can't always get it. You have to qualify for it with both your health and your wealth. And unfortunately, some people just can't get life insurance. But if you put in a term insurance, that's what's called guaranteed convertible insurance. Depending on how long your time frame is and what the contract states, you may be able to have guaranteed convertibility with no underwriting for a certain amount of years. Now, I sell a lot of that to a lot of people because that's important. And then there's the universal life insurance.
Right.
And so that's like the big craze right now on TikTok. There's nothing wrong with it. Okay. It's a tool. I think some people get carried away with, oh, well, that's good or that's bad or that's amazing. Like, no, it's none of those. It's just a tool in how we use it, right? When I'm looking at IULs, index universal life, variable universal life, universal life, all these different aspects, I'll never sell a variable universal life policy, but like an IUL, for example, those are built on what's called a term chassis. So you'll have a term insurance product inside of this that has a cash value on it as well. They have charges, they have fees on it. The cost of the insurance does rise every year. For me, if I'm going to be borrowing from my policy, I'm going to be using it for other investments, I'm typically never going to use it because there's just too many levers and too many unknowns within these policies, right? Now, if I was going to use it for tax-free retirement income, that's a different story. That's very powerful, especially if you do something that we've done before, which is called premium finance life insurance. That can be very powerful in certain circumstances, right? Whole life insurance, I mean, that's the creme de la creme. It's the oldest, right? You get the guarantees. It's going to be there when you die, not if you die. And you can utilize it. You're going to know what the costs are. You're going to know what you get when you get it. You know what your worst case scenario is. And even the worst case scenario is pretty good, right?
I looked at it, you know, when I first funded my policy, and then I realized, oh, I'm going to get almost $4 million guaranteed upon my death and my wife's death. We both have separate policies of equal value, right? That my kids are beneficiaries, right? They're going to get $4 million guaranteed.
Yeah.
Now, the only thing that would stop that from happening, right, is if I surrender the policy, meaning I cancel it or I stop payments. Yeah. But as long as I just keep funding that policy, and which is cool, I'm sure you'll get into, I can, if I ever get into a jam financially, cash flow wise, I can borrow against my policy to fund the policy. I know that's probably confusing for people, but
yeah,
clear that up. Yeah. But I just increased my net worth by 4 million because my estate, I should say, increased by 4 mil. When my kids get that money, let's just say they have a huge inheritance tax. Well, that money coming in from the life insurance is going to cover everything.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, they're going to miss my earning power should I go early. So now I don't have to worry about, man, my kids, my family's going to be taken care of. That's my why. That's why I got into business at age 19. is that I knew that I was going to have a family. That was going to be the most important priority thing in my life. And I always wanted them to be protected and to be taken care of no matter what. So I'm not taking any chances with that. Now, when I have a whole life policy, I'm not taking any chances.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's guaranteed to be there. And like you said, yeah, if you get in a pinch, there are some things that you can do to where, I don't know if I'm allowed to say it, but turn off your premiums, right? You could borrow against your policy, or you could just tell the insurance company what's called reduce paid up. So they'll reduce your face amount and you'll be done paying premiums into the policy, but you still have those contractual guarantees. So it still grows. You can still utilize it. You can still do whatever it needs. You just don't put money into it.
So I'm coming up on 5 years in May, right? And this is where in most policies, if they're structured properly, right, you're going to really start to see the magic happen. Mm-hmm. Can you describe like the 5 to 7 year mark? What happens in the policy that then they really, you start to be like, oh yeah, this is what I signed up for. I'm starting to get the reward here.
Yeah. So first let's say that, you know, some people might be deterred by the 5 years. Are you kidding me? So
yeah,
this is a long-term play, right? When I talk to young guys that are making a lot of money or young girls that are making a lot of money, you need to build a system that's going to grow with you, right? And when you have these policies, they continue to grow with you over time. In these policies, when you build them correctly, usually, depending on your health and age, your break even, meaning the money that you've put into the policy, is equal to the cash value, or the cash value is equal to what you've put into the policy, is going to be in that age, the year range of anywhere between 5 and 8, mm-hmm. right? I was looking at a policy the other day where the gentleman was putting in $300,000 a year into his policy. And by year 5, he had just over $1.5 million in the cash value. So that's kind of like a really big deal to say, I don't know, basically turned into a glorified savings account, right? You're storing capital in here. Your money is going to continue to grow over time in this policy, right? Guaranteed, right? I always tell people is, one, you want to look at year 4. Year 4 is usually, in a good contract, the year at which when you put $1 in, that contract will always grow by $1 or more every year after that. And then years 5 through 8, just depending on your age and health, your rating, that will tell you when break even happens.
Cash value may be a bit confusing for the listener. So let's dive into that. So you got the cash value and then you've got the death benefit, two mm-hmm. totally pretty distinct parts of your policy, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So the cash value part of it, that is the part that you're able to borrow against mm-hmm. if you want to borrow your own money back out. That's why it's called infinite banking, privatized mm-hmm. banking, because you've yeah. created your own bank account, essentially savings account, like you said. And so if I need to go out and buy real estate, or I have something in my business, I need to buy some equipment, I need some more inventory, I want to open up a new brick and mortar store, whatever the case, right? I don't have to go out and get a loan from a bank. I don't have to go through that whole process. I can call up my insurance agent, which is going to be you here in a little bit. We're transferring my policy over to you because my policy sucked. And so we can talk about that too. But I'm able to borrow against my own bank, and yet my cash value and my policy continues to grow, right? That's mm-hmm. a really tough concept for people to get.
Yeah, let's dive into that. So is it fair to say that a lot of your listeners are real estate investors? Or they would understand.
Yeah, they're entrepreneurs or real estate investors, probably for the most part. I mean, that's what I talk about the most. So they're probably going to tune out if they're not interested in those two subjects.
Nice. Okay, cool. I'm a real estate investor as well. I love real estate. Most of my clients are real estate investors. And this is how I usually break it down. Okay. If we were to look at a house, okay, we have a mortgage payment. Every time we pay this mortgage payment, it builds equity in this house, right?
Yep.
And this house has a market value. The equity in the house is a portion of the market value that you have access to today, right?
Right.
Okay. So when I think about whole life insurance, I think about it this way. I have a premium payment that goes into my house. And every time I make that premium payment, it builds my equity position. Now, my equity position also has a death benefit on top of it. So my equity position is always a portion of my death benefit that I can access today, right? Because if I were to pass away with a loan outstanding, they would just take it off my death benefit, right? So the way that I think about it is cash value is the equity position in my whole life insurance contract. I can borrow against it, not from it, but against it to make other investments in different assets that I see fit, right? That produce value in my life today. So do you think that kind of broke it down pretty good for most people?
Yeah, I think that's pretty spot on because most people can understand, you know, that model of traditional housing equity and all. Yeah, that's perfect. Yeah. So if I've got a policy with a death benefit of $1 million, my cash value is 500,000 and I have no loan against that. Like I haven't taken out a loan yet. Mm-hmm. How much can I borrow?
Usually you can borrow up to 95% of that 500,000. That's what you have access to today.
Yeah. So I can borrow what? Yeah. 475,000.
Something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. Close or whatever. I didn't do a calculation, but yeah, you guys got the point. Yeah. So I can borrow that money back out. Mm-hmm. And yet my policy, my cash value is going to continue to compound and grow because you're receiving interest and the dividends. Mm-hmm. Right, which is a portion of the profitability of the whole company returned back to the shareholders, which are the policy owners.
Yeah.
And yet, so I'm not really losing anything by borrowing against my policy. I'm paying interest on the mm-hmm. money that I'm borrowing, but the policy is also growing as much and as or more than the interest that I'm paying on my loan. Do I have that right?
Usually the policy won't grow more than the interest rate. It could maybe sometimes, I'm not really sure. The way that I look at when I'm borrowing my money, right? I don't typically tell people or use my cash value when I'm borrowing it to do things like vacations, buy plane tickets, grocery shop, that type of stuff. And I know that's in the book, but for where I'm at in life and who I'm talking to, we don't typically do that, right? We're only using it for investment. So I look at it in one, two or three different ways. Okay. So one is we have our cash value that's earning, we'll call it 4% right now. Okay. We have our loan and then we have our investment, right? I typically don't ever compare my loan interest to what I'm earning in the policy because I'm earning that in the policy regardless, right? Mm-hmm. What I compare my policy loan with is what my rate of return is on my investment, the asset that I'm purchasing, right?
Oh, so that's a good way. Yeah.
If I borrow against my policy at 5%, and I think some companies are at 5 right now. Let's say I borrow against my policy at 5%. I just need to make sure that I go get an asset with this money that pays more than 5%, hopefully 10, 12, 15%, right? So that's kind of where I'm at because that's the cost of capital to access this. Because when we look at it as a bank, and I think this is kind of where like the infinite banking comes to play is if I'm a banker, let's say you're the depositor, I'm going to tell you, hey, Jack, I'll give you 1% if you start putting your dollars with me, right? Well, that's my cost of capital, right? Is to pay you 1%. If I pay you 1% for $100, but then Joe Schmo comes and asks for a loan for $100, I can charge him 4%. Technically, I think I just made 400% or 300%, right?
It's pretty good.
Because I used 1% to get 4. I didn't take your $100 and just do $100, right? That the interest rates is where I look at and the cost of the capital to the next investment.
It's really all about opportunity cost.
Yep.
I talk about this all the time. Like if I could buy a car for 50 grand in cash, or if I can get a loan against it and borrow the money and it's at 2%, which it's not, well, it's not right now, but it was.
It was.
Right. Yeah, it was. And then I take that 50 grand instead of having it sit in my car, which it would be a depreciating asset. I can go put that into a rental property as a down payment. I can buy a $250,000 rental property that even based on conservative projections, it's going to grow at 19%, 20% with appreciation, loan pay down,
That's right.
All the benefits, right? The ideal formula. That's the only thing that I recommend. Well, personally, it sounds like you're aligned. The only thing that I've ever done when I borrow against my policy, it's typically been real estate related. Because I don't want to borrow money to put into, from myself, even though it's myself. I don't want to borrow money to do something risky that it could wipe that away. I want to do it into real tangible assets. I want to get rental properties. I want to get self-storage. I want to get car wash, you know, car washes. I want to get stuff that stable, predictable cash flow coming out and things that are real and tangible that, I mean, gosh, it's almost impossible to lose all your money in a real estate deal. I mean,
you
have to really mess up and get it uninsured and do some stupid things, right?
Yeah. And it's about being intentional, right? How do we make sure we buy assets, invest in assets that produce cash flow, right? Now, one thing I do want to point out, a lot of people may be hearing us right now talk about like, hey, you guys keep saying against and like you are impersonating on the, hey, against, not from, but against, right? So what we mean by that is if you have a whole life insurance policy at an insurance company, if you ask for a loan, the insurance company will take your policy as collateral, okay? And they will give you money from their general account, okay? So they'll hold your policy, still earning the, let's call it 100 grand. Let's say you had 100 grand in here. It's still earning your minimum and then some dividends on top of that, right? Mm-hmm. Now you also have their, I think I said 100 grand, their 100 grand in another investment. So you cloned your dollars in the investments that you're making, right? So a lot of times there's really three people that we say are in this world. There's savers, there's debtors, and then there's wealth creators, right? Savers are the guys that save, and then they deplete to zero because they bought an asset, and then they hope to fill that bucket up quicker because of that new asset. And then they'll just continue to do it again. Yes, their bucket fills up faster. However, they have to start over at zero or near zero every single time they buy a new asset. Debtors, on the other hand, they go borrow a bunch of money and then try to pay it off to zero and then go borrow a bunch of money and then try to pay it off to zero, right? Always going back to zero. The reason we use the whole life insurance is because you have that guaranteed growth that you don't interrupt and you can become the wealth creator because, you know, you are, you know, you're borrowing against your policy at 100, but maybe by the time that you pay off that line of credit, your policy from the premiums that you've paid on top of that and the growth of the policy, instead of you coming back in at zero, now you're probably more than 100 grand in your cash value, right? So there's a lot to think about there.
Yeah, I love that. Debtors, savers, and wealth creators. That's the title for the podcast for this episode. You just gave it to me. You know, it always comes to me like either during or after the episode, like, what am I going to call this title? So people actually click on it and listen.
Right? Yeah. Yeah. Awesome. And I didn't come up with that. I don't know where I got it. I'm sure I've read it in a few books.
Every best idea I've ever had, I borrowed from somebody else. I mean, I took like little pieces and put it all together, but it wasn't typically original idea of mine.
Yep.
You know, you made a good point. We were chatting the other day. You're like the policy is a great place to store cash that's going to get a return in between investments. Mm-hmm. Most people, like you said, they're approaching their wealth building as a saver, mm-hmm. which then, you have to start all over every time. You know, you save up 100K, you put it into 100K into an investment, you're back at zero. Now you got to resave. Whereas with these policies, That's the reason I like them so much is it gives me liquidity. I have liquidity instant, which means how quickly you can access your cash to do, you know, whatever you want to do with it. And not only the liquidity, but it's growing while it's in between investments. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then on top of that, I'm protected from lawsuits. On top of that, I've got a huge death benefit that is awaiting my next of kin or whoever I designate that I want it to go to. If you don't have kids, you can, you know, you could designate it to a charity. You could designate it to whoever you want as the beneficiary. Incredible way to look at it. So why are people so negative on the internet about these? Not everybody is, but there's haters. And of course, everything in life has its detractors and its haters. So that shouldn't be all that surprising. People hate MLM. I mean, that's an incredible business model I've participated in for 25 years and love it. Changed our life, changed a lot of thousands of people's lives with the product results and the opportunity. And so we have our share of haters. Your industry has very vocal haters as well. What's their problem? Like, why are they such idiots?
You know, I deal with this a lot because, and first, let me, like, MLM, fantastic business. I work with a lot of people in the MLM space. I love it. And we have our haters too. And I think, you know, I go across the country and I do a lot of joint work with a lot of other advisors. And I actually come in and speak with investment advisors about these policies. And truth be told is most of them just don't actually know how they work. They haven't actually spent the time to look in them. And, you know, I have this one, this reel that always goes through my head. I was in a meeting with an investment advisor, speaking to one of their clients that they asked me to come in to help save a case. And it's a $2 billion management firm. And we're going through the policy. And the guy wanted to look at the later years. And so I was going to show him how, you know, you could use it during retirement. And the advisor spoke up and said, hey, this is where the cost of the insurance goes higher. And I'm like, ooh, I didn't say anything. I just kind of brushed over it. And I just wanted to say, you know, you're wrong here. That's not actually how this policy works. In that instance, the cost of the insurance wasn't even there anymore, right? I think it was like he put in 50 grand and he got back something like 250. Right, into his policy because he was so far along and been doing it for so long. Once you go in with an open mind and you understand why and how the policy was put in place, then I think it opens up conversation to know, like, hey, this was the exact reason why we put it in place. This is why we want it to grow with us. This is how we're going to use it in retirement. This is how we want to utilize it for our family, right? Most of the time, they just don't look at the full encompassing picture of how everything is coordinated. And I don't blame them because if you're an investment advisor, you know, you want all the money to go into investments. That's how you get paid. And if you put it in a whole life insurance policy, not really going into the investment. So there's a little bit of a battle there. And I'm not saying like they're going to pick one of the other just because that's the way it needs to be. They just haven't looked at it to the full aspect that I know that they should.
When I sent out an email about why I love whole life policies so much to my email list, which you guys should all be on, the Passive Income Playbook. You love my letter.
I do. I send you emails about it all the time.
You do. I know. I appreciate that, man, because nobody else ever freaking does that. And I know they love it because they're opening it up every time. Yeah. So, like, if they didn't love it, they wouldn't be. But what was that? They call it a shameless plug there or something.
Yeah.
Got to do those all the time. One guy emailed me back and he said, well, these, you know, I think I disagree with you on this. I think these are only for the top 1%. And so my response back to him was, well, even if that were the case, which I do disagree with you on that, I think it's not just top 1% that these are great for, but I'm not speaking to average people like Dave Ramsey. Mm-hmm. I'm speaking to people that want to build indestructible wealth.
That's right. That's
I'm not speaking to average people. So if you're listening to my podcast, you know, you're not an average person. I mean, you're trying to grow something significant and leave a legacy and all that. And look, there's no judgment. There's no, we're better than you or, you know, because whatever. It's just the fact is I'm speaking to people that are high performers and they're really looking to do something special with their money. So what do you say to that? Like, who's it? Is there anybody that's not good for, like, if you're at a certain income level or, you know, financial status that it wouldn't really make sense for you to do and that you should do the Dave Ramsey buy term, invest the difference?
Yeah. Good question. So the first standpoint that I kind of view this from is like most people think when somebody comes across and says, oh, you need to do whole life insurance, they're thinking that it's coming across as the be all end all strategy and you need to put all your money there. This is not the be-all end-all strategy, right? It does help turbocharge all your other assets and helps them perform better, but you shouldn't put every single dollar of everything that you have through whole life insurance. If the only thing that you had was whole life insurance, yes, you would have a really good financial plan, but you'd be extremely conservative, right? The other question that you asked was like, who should do this and who should not do this, right? Mm-hmm. It's kind of difficult. what I would say is like, hey, you know, if you are just hunkered down with debt, every dollar that you have is getting just outflowing your life. You can't really save anything. Nothing's happening. Probably don't do it.
Yeah. Right? I 100% agree with that. Attack your debt, get that off your, that energy, get that distraction off your books. You don't need that in your life. It's financial cancer.
Oh yeah. All day long. And so you need to take care of that. If you can't save, if you don't know how to spend less than you're making, then there's a problem there that you need to get handled. Right. Yeah. And I think that's who Dave Ramsey's talking to. Now there's kind of the other two levels of, hey, when would we want these life insurance? Now, I love traditional financial planning, right? But I got to say, it just doesn't jazz me up when somebody comes to me and they're like, hey, you know, I want to retire by 65 and I think we should put money in our 401ks and investment account and we'll talk to you when we're 65. Like, that just doesn't jazz me up. But when we look at that traditional planning, the goal is that you are setting money aside to reach your maximum financial potential, right? And when you reach your maximum financial potential and you come to this level of, hey, it's now the distribution phase and we want to take income. Well, if you bought term and invested the difference, you canceled your insurance and you self-insured, which really just means you don't have any insurance, right? You bought dollar for dollar on the insurance policy. And I'd never buy dollar for dollar insurance. That just sounds a little funny, right? Mm-hmm. But you subject yourself to the control of the market, government and taxes, and the world economy in inflation, right? Because all you have left is interest only or the safe withdrawal rate, right? That's what you have left. And you're at the whims of what the world gives you, right? Whereas if you were to show up in the traditional day of retirement and you took that traditional approach, but you showed up with a one-to-one ratio of assets to what I call asset insurance or paid up permanent life insurance, now you can spend those assets with the peace of mind that you won't run out of money while having the maximum enjoyment of it. Because actuarially, retirement is an actuary scenario. You start retirement and you're going to do it until you die, right? So it's an actuarial piece of life. And if you can, you know, structure it the right way, you would hope that you can spend down all your assets. Let's say you had $1 million of assets. You can spend down all your assets to zero because the day that you die, that all gets replaced to the person that you left over, right? And so now they start, you know, towards probably, hopefully the in later years of their retirement, they have more income, they have more to give later on, right? That's kind of the traditional approach. And I usually, if you're, you know, making over, I would say probably 80 grand, you're saving more than you're making. You're saving more than you're spending. You know, you're doing a good job, right?
Do you see it like there's a minimum amount that you'd want to put in per month before, like if they just don't make sense? Like $1,000 a month is kind of what I was thinking. Is what do you?
Yes and no. On the traditional side of things, when you're doing that traditional planning, it's more along the lines of death benefit. You want the death benefit there. So a good kind of rule of thumb might be, hey, you send a third of your income, like let's say that you put 15% of wealth creation to the side, send a third of it to the life insurance, and then a third to savings, and then a third to your growth investment assets. And you grow from there. And maybe what you buy the permanent life insurance with are the interest, the dividends, the earnings off your investment portfolio to purchase more permanent life insurance. And that would help you grow. On the traditional sense, it's more about, you know, death benefit. Now, when it comes to investors, guys like us that are more about, hey, I'm taking control of my financial future. I'm doing my investing. I'm learning how to grow in my own sphere. And I understand that I'm my number one asset and my greatest investment. Then I think it changes a little bit because this is the place to store your capital, right? Before investments and in between investments. Then, yes, I would say about $1,000 a month, $10,000 a year would probably be a good idea to start with going into one of these policies. Anything less, tough value of money, it's just kind of hard.
Well, we're about out of time, and I really want you to answer the final question, of course. We got so much other stuff that we can talk about, too. I love your investing principles. You're going to have to come back on the show like very soon, and we can dive into that.
Yeah, let's do it.
I think that's a whole different podcast conversation. That is awesome. What's the one question that I should have asked you, but I didn't ask you?
Probably, who do I work best with? That's usually what I ask in the beginning.
Yep.
You know, most of the time I'm working with guys under the age of 40, or girls, I keep saying guys. People under the age of 40, they're big dreamers, they're big doers. They're making over 250 grand a year. They're lifelong learners, right? And they want to take control of their financial future. Most of the people that I work with they'll fall under the buckets of business owners, investors, or highly compensated individuals. And that could range anywhere from high ticket sales reps, which I'm learning is a new thing that I've started picking up clients in, and doctors, surgeons, to lawyers, partners in major law firms, right? And then when we get in there, we're able to look at your cash flow, where everything's going, create cash flow optimization, and then build from there into a life of abundance that, you know, we get to constantly ask, how do we build a life that we don't have to retire from?
So how do people follow you if they want to get in touch with you, get started with a policy? I mean, like I told the listeners, if they were tuned in and listening, that, you know, I'm switching my policy over to you because my policy was, it went bad, right? That's a whole other subject as well. But in a nutshell, I was with a mutual company where the policy owners own the company or part of the company, right? And then somebody, you know, came in and bought it out, and it really hurt the growth of the policy. It took away the dividends like you talked about. So I finally just said, enough is enough. I'm switching, and grateful for you cold messaging me on LinkedIn. I never respond to those. Yeah. I was just thinking back and talking to Shecky, my business partner. I'm like, I never respond to those cold pitches, but you just had a different approach. It was like, hey, I want to build a relationship type approach. And that's the way I do business. So I'm switching over to you. We're about to close, I don't know, next couple months, right? And so I fully endorse you. What, you know, how do they get a hold of you to do that if they want to get a policy started, or maybe take a look at their policy that they're in, and you can objectively tell them if it makes sense or doesn't make sense to switch it over? How do they get you?
One would be LinkedIn. I post on there daily, and that's a lot of fun. Another could, you know, you could email me, brock@stonecenturyfinancial.com. That's one way you could find me. I don't typically let people go to my Instagram, but if you want, you can follow me on Instagram at brock4tnr. I usually keep it pretty personal, but every now and then I'll throw some good stuff out there.
All right. Yeah, we'll put all that in the show notes. So you guys can go to my website, myindestructiblewealth.com, and then you can click on his links if for whatever reason you're driving at the gym, you didn't write those down. They'll always be in the show notes.
Yeah. And happy to look at policies that are in place, or saying, hey, does it make sense for us to get a policy? Or, hey, I don't believe it. Can we look at it?
Yeah. Yeah. And I trust that you're going to be very straightforward and honest and look at the best interest of whoever's contacting you, not what's good for you, but what's good for them. And that is the only way to do business. And that's what I respect about you. So awesome. Well, thank you so much for being on. We'll definitely have you back on shortly, and looking forward to an awesome partnership and also serving our community. So again, appreciate all your wisdom, man. At 25, a lot of wisdom here. Thank you, bud.
Yeah. Thank you. This was a lot of fun.
Awesome. Here we go.
That's a wrap for this episode on the Indestructible Wealth Podcast. If you'd like to dive deeper into your own wealth building strategy, check us out at myindestructiblewealth.com and follow along on LinkedIn, Facebook, Instagram, and yes, even TikTok. Send me your questions and your financial challenges, and I promise I'll respond. Also, I'll think you're really awesome if you'll share and leave me a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts. Until next time, remember, our mission here is to help you make, keep, and grow wealth you can enjoy now and for years to come.